is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We have a unique program today, and I'm very fascinated with the topic. Some of you are going to be quite surprised to hear about it, I suspect, because it's a story that originates 61 years ago. And we're joined on the phone by Professor Peter Laufer from the University of Oregon, a professor in journalism there. Also, Zach DeMars, lead reporter and author, and Julia Mueller, who is with us. Peter, first of all, tell us more about Classroom 15 and how this whole project began.
Well, this whole project just lives and breathes Douglas County, Kyle, and that's why we're so glad to be talking with your audience now. It came about in the winter 2019 when I saw in the New York Times a This Day in History column that said, and a lot of your listeners are going to remember this, I'm sure, that on that day in history, at the elementary school that you know is no longer there in Roseburg, a little girl then 10 years old wanted to represent her class and their pen pal project in their attempts to find pen pals in what was then the Soviet Union. And they wrote to their congressman and asked for some help. And he approached the Eisenhower State Department and they said, no chance. You are going to get a dump truck load of Soviet propaganda in that sweet little Roseburg, and we're not helping. And so when we saw that brief in the New York Times, the class reached out to try to find Janice Boyle and, in fact, succeeded. And then we realized there was much more, as Paul Harvey would say, to the story.
Now, Peter, had you heard about this ever before?
No, I had no. I must confess that I'm one of these californicating Oregonians, and I came up here about a dozen years ago and had no hint of this history in Roseburg.
Now, the school we're speaking of is Riverside School, which was along Garden Valley Boulevard right by Cedar. It's now what was left of the school, now turned into office buildings and a church and things like that. But not everybody here even realizes that that was a school at one point, burned down a number of years later. Zach, talk about how you got involved in this project.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to be in Peter's reporting to class that term when he brought in the New York Times column. And so I was part of his class, and this actually started as, a 30-minute in-class assignment because we had found this story from history, and we had seen that it was relatively local. The New York Times doesn't often write about things going on in Oregon. So even in Eugene, we saw that Roseburg dateline, and we were excited about the fact that it was local. And so he gave us about 30 minutes to go see if we could find Janice Boyle, who was the 10-year-old at the time who was named in that story. And so Peter assigned us to see if we could go find that girl as a reporting assignment and see if we could talk to her and if she remembered what had happened 60 years ago. And eventually, we kept working and we kept getting closer and closer to finding her. And a 30-minute assignment in class turned into a 2-hour assignment in class. And then it spilled over to the next class and the next. And our class of 10 or 15 students, we all got really engaged in this project and all started picking up different angles of it. And we all started running with different parts of this story that we had found starting in that one class there.
Julia, what was your role in all this?
I was the managing editor of the project, and I also wrote a chapter later on. I wasn't in the class where Peter brought in the New York Times article and waved it around and said, find that girl who was mentioned there. But I joined the next term once the class, who, like Zach mentioned, the class that started, you know, each of them individually embracing some aspect of the story, writing smaller articles. Once they decided to start meeting beyond the classroom into the next term after the reporting course was over, I was brought on to first copy edit, but then eventually I became managing editor and kind of led the reporting, researching, writing expansion process as we took this from smaller articles about, you know, the teacher of the fourth grade class, the fourth grade class secretary that was mentioned in the article, the Roseburg at the time, all of those pieces, and expanded them into something that could look like a book.
As people can probably imagine listening to this, there's a lot of aspects to this story, and it's certainly not something we're going to get all the way through in 20 or 25 minutes here. You'll be happy to know that Classroom 15 is a special section coming out in this Sunday's News Review. And Peter, this is really all began with the News Review, with their story about this attempt back in 1960.
There's no question, Kyle. And if we haven't made it clear, the project then resulted in the just published book, Classroom 15, How the Hoover FBI Censored the Dreams of Innocent Oregon Fourth Graders. And it lives and breathes Roseburg, as I said, and it is fueled by the News Review. The story first appeared in the News Review, a real example of how local journalism can become global. It was picked up by the Oregonian, the AP, then the New York Times, Pravda, in what was then the Soviet Union, ran the story. And one of the things that your listeners will learn if they read this book is that it was because of the Pravda story that letters came from Russia back to Douglas County seeking pen pals, even though the State Department had refused to help the Roseburg fourth graders find correspondence in the Soviet Union.
Now, I wasn't around in 1960, but I'm not that far removed. And growing up, pen pals was something that was very common then in school. I think I did that two or three times along the way, different schools I went to in Oregon, and we get connected for various reasons. Now, social media and the internet probably take care of things like that. But back then, it was a big deal, and kids, it was a chance to really go out and expand and learn more about the world. But Peter, this Cold War was obviously the overarching reason for the governmental opposition to this.
Yeah, absolutely. We were in the middle of the Red Scare in 1960, as some of your listeners undoubtedly will remember. And one of the things Julia did in the book was organize it in such a way that for those who weren't there then, the blanks are filled in. There's a chapter that puts the Red Scare into context for people who were around then and need to be reminded, and people who are not that well versed in the history. The same is true, and this undoubtedly will intrigue your Roseburg listeners, Kyle. We have a chapter that tries to, and remember, we are far removed from Roseburg in 1960, a chapter that tries to reinvent Roseburg of the late 50s and early 60s for readers who want to re-experience it and those who weren't around then. And that's something that maybe Julia can talk about how we pulled that off.
Yeah, Julia, tell us more.
Yeah, well, the way that we ended up structuring the book was we dove into this really specific event that happened, right? So the fourth grade class secretary writing to request pen pal communication beyond the Iron Curtain and the State Department's denial of that request. But then we wanted to examine the context in which this all happened, why, and kind of explore the whys. You know, why did the teacher suggest this assignment? Why did the State Department oppose it? Why did it garner such a reaction from the United States readership as it got to the New York Times, and then abroad as letters started coming in, like Peter mentioned, from the USSR? And obviously, we can't answer all of those questions in the book, but I believe that the context that we provide kind of gets at answering those questions. some color to how Roseburg might have looked in the late 50s, early 60s. So we have interviews with Stanis's, Stanis being the fourth grade class secretary, her classmates, the family of her teacher, and just to give a little bit of an image of what Roseburg would have looked like.
All right, more when we come back, talking about Classroom 15. Back in a minute on Inside Douglas County, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, News Radio 1240, KQEN 1247. Lars Larson show coming up at 1 o'clock. A fascinating discussion about Classroom 15. It's a book that's out now. We'll tell you how to get it here in just a bit. Professor Peter Loffer from the University of Oregon, Zach DeMars, Julia Muller with us as well. Julia, before the break, you were explaining, talking about kind of what Roseburg was like in the late 50s, early 60s, and it occurs to me, though again I wasn't quite here at that point, that Roseburg folks were just dealing with the aftermath of the cleanup from the blast that had occurred just a few months before this attempt took place.
Right. I think that something that's really interesting is that we were able to get to construct a lot of this story from memories, and a lot of it are really fond memories, especially of Roseburg. I was talking just recently with the then fourth grade class secretary, Janice, who now lives in Las Vegas, Nevada, and she waxes poetic about Roseburg. She considers it to be where she grew up and where her home is. She talks about Roseburg in her memories as being a place that's green and being a place that's soft, very safe, run all over the place kind of town. And I think something that's really interesting in this story is that, of course, we examine kind of the socio-political aspects of this. We talk about, the political climate of the time and, you know, the international relations landscape. But we also have a lot of really potent, really beautiful memories that these people have of their childhoods, because what we're doing is we're looking back on people's youth and their memories of being students in classrooms. And so I think that's a really nice balance that we have in the book.
Zach DeMars is the lead reporter and author. Zach, let's fast forward this a bit to as this project evolved. You actually ultimately went to Russia. Tell us about that.
That's right. Yeah. So one of the things that we kind of realized that this story needed to be able to really tell it the right way was to kind of answer the question, what would happen if we tried this again? So we were fortunate to have the assistance of a fourth grade class in Yonkala. Some fourth graders there wrote some letters to potential future pen pals in Russia. And I was fortunate enough to take those letters over there and actually bring them to a fourth grade class in Rostov-on-Don, which is a 13-hour train ride south of Moscow. So I spent a cold but exciting and really educational week in Rostov-on-Don and Moscow, meeting with some students there to, you know, not only get their takes on some of the themes of the book, international connection and communication with peers around the globe, but also just to have a kind of one-on-one connection with a lot of those students, which I think would have been what the fourth graders of 1960, of 1960s Roseburg, really would have wanted from that theorized pen pal relationship, would have been just that simple one-on-one kind of communication that I helped those students engage with when I went over there.
How did you make the connection with Yonkala students?
Well, I will answer that. We were extremely fortunate all along the way, Kyle, because serendipity ought to be the subtitle of the book instead of how the Hoover FBI censored the dreams of innocent Oregon fourth graders. We had in our class one of the members, a younger sister who was in the fourth grade in Yonkala, and it just seemed too perfect. So that's why we embraced the Yonkala school in the project. It's another example, I think, Kyle, of how we feel that the book is so about Roseburg, but it's also about how the local is the global. All of these themes are intimate to Roseburg, but they also resonate with people everywhere.
And you think about 1960 and what was available. You don't have an internet. You don't have chat rooms. You don't have all these things. You know, right now you could go online and find out all kinds of things about Russia in 30 seconds. As a fourth grader in 1960, your knowledge would be pretty minimal.
Your knowledge may well be minimal, and you may be going to the library and searching the old-fashioned way. And that's what was so magical about their attempts to reach out, to connect with their peers that they didn't know elsewhere. And that was what was so diabolical about the Eisenhower State Department slapping them down. And we see this not just as a history, but we see it as something that is a cautionary tale about our contemporary era. And we need to be careful about not replicating those kinds of mistakes, no matter how fast the internet is.
So, Zach, while you were in Russia, well, first off, how much time did you spend over there?
So I spent about a week there, 2.5 days with the actual classroom that I got to be with.
And I am guessing that was probably your first trip to Russia.
Absolutely, yeah. I had never been before, and fortunately, through some serendipitous connections, like Peter mentioned, we had a colleague there who was willing to be my guide and my translator. He was deeply helpful in the project, but it was really eye opening to be there for the first time, especially.
And for the letters that you brought back to the kids in Yonkala, what was their reaction?
So most of those letters, they were they focused primarily on a lot of the things that you might expect. Some of the very very simple and human things that fourth graders often write about. Their favorite activities, their classes, their school, those sorts of things. So the students were really excited to be able to have that connection with peers across the globe, and they were excited about the prospect of being able to hear back and to make that connection with people they had never met before. And I think it was also really exciting for them to be able to make a connection in a way that is so different than every other connection they've been able to make. Because, students right now obviously are doing so much of their school and so much of their other activities on Zoom calls or on computers in classes. But this is just, this is pure letter-to-letter communication. So I think the ability to do that outside of the world of Instagram or Facebook was really exhilarating for them, too, because it's just so different than every other way they communicate and make friends.
And Professor Laufer, I'm struck also by the fact that you spotted this when you did, because fast forward to the past year we have had, both in America and around the world, this project would have looked a lot different if it would have began in the middle of COVID-19.
Yeah, we were obviously fortunate to be able to send Zach to Russia and to have the kind of interaction that resulted. For example, one of the students went up to Sisters and found a chest, an old Hope chest, from the family of the teacher, Bud McFetrich. And some of your listeners right now undoubtedly are saying, Bud McFetrich, he was my teacher. I love that man, because he was universally loved in Roseburg. And because of that trip, able to, with his daughter, go through the chest and find some of the extraordinary letters from Russia that Bud McFetrich saved. And we were able to then use them in the book Classroom 15 and reproduce these gorgeous, gorgeous letters with the extraordinary penmanship and the intriguing stamps and illustrative material on them that bring that period to life.
Now, people are hearing about this story, for a lot of cases, probably for the first time if they're younger or haven't been here as long. Again, you'll be able to read more about it in a special section in the News Review on Sunday. But Professor Laufer, where can people obtain this book?
Well, thank you for asking that, because we do want it everywhere. You can get the book at your friendly neighborhood bookstore, but as Kyle said, we're restricted from that kind of activity. You can order it directly from the massive Amazon, Classroom 15. If you search it as Classroom 15 Oregon, it'll come up. It just Classroom 15 often brings up strange other things. The subtitle again is How the Hoover FBI Censored the Dreams of Innocent Oregon Fourth Graders. It will be stopped at the gift shop at your museum there in Roseburg. And you can also order it from Anthem Press. That's our publisher, Anthem Press, in New York and London. So Classroom 15, How the Hoover FBI Censored the Dreams of Innocent Oregon Fourth Graders. We look forward to Roseburg reading this book, and we look forward to hearing from Roseburg about what they think about how we handled their story.
About 50 seconds left. Professor Loffer, was this one of the more unique things you've done over your time as a journalism professor?
Well, you and your audience know how spectacular the student body is at the University of Oregon, but as the prime of Miss Jean Brody taught me in terms of terminology, I was lucky with this class to have the creme de la creme. And you've heard from Zach DeMars and Julia Mueller this half hour. You know how fortunate I am to work with students like this who come to me, advance in their careers, and already are journalists. And to be able to make that happen, to use the classroom as a newsroom, was an extraordinary privilege for me.
Classroom 15, a special section in Sunday's News Review. The book available on Amazon. Also, copies out at the Douglas County Museum at the fairgrounds as well. All of you, thanks for being on this afternoon. Professor Peter Loffer, Zach DeMars, Julia Mueller. Thanks for being on. We appreciate it. What a story.
Well, thank you, Kyle. We really appreciate you bringing it to Roseburg and your audience.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.